Pro Circuit Racing, based in Corona, California, and founded in 1978 by Mitch Payton, is known for two things: building high-quality horsepower and winning races. The name Pro Circuit is worldwide recognition that you have bought the best, and we strive to get you the very best products for your bike. From two strokes to four,
engine porting, suspension, and our top-rated exhaust products,
we cover it all. And just one look at teams like Team 2-2 with Chad Reed, Star Racing, Hardin Huntington, and of course our own team consisting of Dean Wilson, Brock Tickle, Blake Baggett, Tyler Rattray, and Darren Durham, we make champions. Last year, our team was the first in American motocross history to sweep the top three in the outdoor motocross series. Visit ProCircuit.com for more info on all the services and products. Pro Circuit, we race.
Mitch Payton, here we are, Wednesday night, less than a month away from Anaheim 1, and I found you grinding ahead. Still doing that.
That's the fun part of the day, actually. So that's enjoyable.
That's the part where you don't have to worry about business, financial-wise, anything like that. You're just grinding.
Finances, paperwork, getting something approved or whatever.
Yeah. Right. How's everything going? You've got a – I don't know if you've realized this, but you've signed a lot of guys.
Yeah, so we know that.
Do you notice the extra work? I mean, is it all hands on deck more than ever before?
No, I think it'll be okay. You know, it's a lot of kind of things to get planned out now, and once we get everything in place to make it work for the year, you know, it'll be okay. Going into Supercross, you know, it's only three guys per coast, so that isn't too terrible, but come outdoors when it's six people there, that's going to be a lot of work.
Right. Can you talk about the Wilson and Rattray thing that came up a little while ago? You had your four guys, and they're certainly solid. Tyler was shopping for a full 450 ride, as was Dean, and, you know, his deal fell apart. How'd that happen? Did they come to you? Did Monster make it happen? Did those – obviously, your relationship with those guys make it happen? I mean, how much of a effort did it take from everybody to make it happen for you?
Well, you know, it was kind of odd because, you know, like we did have the four guys signed, and you know, like I no more than we got them signed, then we had a couple injuries and stuff, you know, and I kind of wanted to see if we could do something for Tyler, you know, because he rode the 450 last year, and you know, I wanted him to ride 250 outdoors last year, and Kawasaki needed him, so they asked if they could borrow him, you know, to bump him up. And you know, I'm like, gosh, I really kind of need him, you know. Yeah. we're kind of picked over, you know, like we were down to Blake, and then I had to hire Ivan just to have another guy, and then you know, Tyler really wanted to do it, so I wasn't going to stand in his way. So, and Cowie asked if they kind of really needed him, so all right. And then he got hurt, and I wanted to see him get a real fair shake at it, you know, one good solid year on a 450. And I think for us, it would be exciting for us to have a guy like Tyler for outdoors. And then I think he could be a big benefit to us, you know, for Supercross, especially considering, you know, I was having some guys injured and we weren't positive on, you know, return dates. So I think it was really important. And then we no more than got that kind of finalized and finished, and then all of a sudden, you know, I get this phone call, and it's like
a Scottish lad.
Well, it wasn't Dean; it was Tony. So Tony called and said that, you know, things weren't gonna work out, and they were looking for a home. And you know, I know they looked a few different places, and we were probably one of, I think, maybe three places or whatever. And I know Chad talked to him also. For us to do it, you know, like he wanted to ride 450s, but same thing, you know, if for the team, Pro Circuit and Kawasaki and Monster and Traxxas and all of our sponsors, you know, like we needed to be, you know, kind of loaded in a good position for the 250 class. So the only way we could do it is if Dean would ride 250 Supercross again, and then we could support him for 450 outdoors. And, you know, he thought about it a little bit, and then finally decided, you know, like that's a good idea. And it took a lot of effort on everybody's part. You know, Kawasaki had to come to the table, and ourselves had to come to the table, and Monster and Traxxas and Thor and
Everybody,
Scott,
right?
Everybody had to like just come because everybody was done, you know. And once the budgets are kind of done, everybody's not in the negotiating position, and they're like, "Hey, we're done." And so then you call them back up and say, "Hey, what about a sixth guy, Dean Wilson?" And they're like, "What? Are you serious?"
Right.
And but you know, like it's one of our guys, and we considered him, you know, kind of part of our family, and and so did everybody else, and everybody else chipped in, and we were able to do it.
And you're going 450 outdoors. What's the political game with that, with Kawasaki? Is there any political gain you know, you're going to be racing against Ryan Villopoto and Jake Weimer, and possibly beating them. How is that? We know how this goes. I mean, even back in the early 90s, Honda was getting a little mad that you were beating them on, you know, your 125s. So it's a little, you know, and Chad's mentioned a few things in the media here and there about that sort of stuff.
I would hope that everything's going to be okay. You know, like I think that, you know, I think Ryan Villopoto is I think everybody is probably going to say the guy to beat, right?
Yeah.
So I think he's pretty confident in his ability, and I don't think us running a 450 guy is going to, you know, leave him sleepless at night.
Right.
And, you know, actually, like I said, we wouldn't have been able to do it if Kawasaki didn't want to do it. You know, and Reed was kind of like, you know, in the position that he wanted Dean to stay on a Kawasaki and that he would help that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it'll be fine. You know, like, you know, I get along really good with Ryan and I get along good with Jake, and the relationship between us and Cowie is probably, I think, probably better than it's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we all tried to realize that we all have very similar goals and we kind of need to work together, and we have been. And that's from everything from you know, the technical side to sponsorships and everything. We're trying to work closer. So I think it's it doesn't seem like it's going to be a problem. I think it should be really good. And the truth is you know, like if we don't have some spots for our kids, you know, like when, you know, we've been very lucky that we brought a lot of really talented kids through our program. And where do they go? You know, like if you don't have a spot for them, you know, they're gonna leave Pro Circuit, they're gonna leave, you know, Kawasaki or Monster, and they're gonna go somewhere else. And if they lose them, you know, the chances are they'll make a new home, and you'll probably never get them back. So this is a way to keep them around and you know, let everybody kind of see what they're about and put the kids that come through our program on a 450 and give them an opportunity, and hopefully they can do good with it.
Yeah, I guess, you know, you lost Bogle, right? At Kawasaki, you lost Bogle. Was it Bogle?
Yeah.
And Blake Baggett even had to go to a Suzuki year. Is that sort of the tipping point? Was that where things where you guys, and let's face it, Geico is turning out some terrific riders.
Well,
is that all part of the thinking or no?
You know, Geico's done a really good job, you know, with their program, and they've always been a good competitor to compete against. But also, I think KTM's a really strong competitor, and I don't underestimate really anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's fair to say. But they've invested some money in trying to sign kids at a young age, more so than we do. But our standpoint was that, you know, like the way our program has always worked is that we're a lights program, and we're doing the professional side, and we have always been there to try to support Team Green, support their amateur kids, and also support other kids. And I think having, you know, these elite, you know, factory guys at an amateur level, like I'm not a
slippery slope.
Yeah, like once you start, like where does it stop? You
know? I don't know.
So, like, I think it's pretty gnarly, and I like the way Kawasaki does it. They have like they have four or five kids or six kids that they want to help. And the way that we do that is, you know, like we try to supply them all equal equipment.
Yep.
And then we kind of wait and see who's the cream of the crop. And then we want to pick them, you know, then. And I think in most cases, it's worked successfully.
Mm-hmm.
you know, we have lost a few along the way, though, too.
Yeah.
And times change. And everybody's, you know, dipping deeper and spending more. Yeah. And I don't know.
Where do you,
know,
you like, stop? Right.
Where we'll have to see in another year or so if it's always successful or if mm-hmm. it's, you know, there's some kids can make that transition really easy. And then other kids, it might take them a couple years. So right. it's hard to say.
If you win both Supercross titles last year, which is, I think, only the second time in 9 years you didn't win a Supercross title, was last year. If you win both Supercross titles, do you have six guys right now? I mean, is it a sense of reloading and showing Geico and Rockstar and Star Racing what you got?
Is that why we did it?
Yeah, like, no, I mean, you know I what I mean? Like, you didn't win any titles, and you're a competitive guy. And
no, I don't think so.
Okay.
Because the truth is that it's only going to, like, as sad as it is, you know, you're going to have three riders, and it's going to only take one of them to win the championship.
Right, right.
All three can't win.
Last time I checked.
So, you know, like we try to get the best talent we can. And, mm-hmm. and obviously, you know, the truth is a lot of people have kind of gunned towards us.
Absolutely.
You know, for sure. They're, you know, the other teams have, you know, like we'll speak to a rider and then pretty soon, you know, they know that we're talking to them and they'll spend more money. They'll mm-hmm. offer more money.
Right.
And, you know, some kids are willing to do it for a similar amount or even lesser amount, but then sometimes, you know, like you look at, I've seen some of the offers, and if it's double, like, god dang,
yeah,
double's a lot of money.
yeah.
So like there's guys spending a lot of money, and yeah. I don't even know where some of them are getting it right. Even myself.
Yeah you are the one with the bullseye for sure. The 450 program, you did it last year for the first time, indoors and out. How was it? There's all, you know, every year it's Mitch is having 450 team. Mitch is doing it. Langston's doing it. Tedesco's doing it. Every year, Hanny's doing full. You know, you hear this. You did it finally last year, full year. And how was it? Did you feel like it helped or hurt you in places? Either one.
Well, I think it was. I don't think it. You know, like I've read on the internet a couple.
Those internet people.
Yeah, you know how they are.
Yeah, I do.
And or a couple guys said maybe we took our eye off the ball, but it really didn't. You know, like we set our goals and you know, like everything that we're trying to do, you know, seriously takes time to build parts,
yeah.
get testing done, and like we have that all kind of lined out as it is anyway. And the 450 thing was just an extension of what we're doing, and I look at it more along the lines of almost. Why not? You mm-hmm. know, like Factory Connection has done that with Kevin
yeah.
and LaRocco and stuff.
Metcalf rode the outdoors, yeah.
Yeah, and like it didn't really take away from their program, and yet it gave them a little exposure in the big class, and mm-hmm. I think it's good. And any time that you have to race at that level, you learn something.
Right. So now you're doing two guys outdoors, 450s. But the circumstances are a little different. You know, Tickle had the contract that you honored, so you took him indoor racing. Mm-hmm. Dean Wilson fell into your lap, but he really wanted to go 450s, so you're okay. And Rattray, like you said, you want to give him another shot, a fair shot. Is this a concentrated effort by you to go 450 racing, or is it sort of like in 2014, will you be still in 450s, or is it totally case by case, the way it's working out?
No, I think the plan is to be there in 14
okay.
as a 450 team also, you know,
both
Supercross and outdoors with Dean Wilson, you
okay.
know, like as one of the guys. And then, you know, like it'd be great to evaluate who we can get for a second rider for next year. Maybe that's Tyler. Maybe it's Blake. You know, who knows?
Yep.
Who knows who's available? And
but this is the step. This is the step,
you know,
right.
and it's we're committed to it. Obviously, we still have to get, you know, it's like one of those things. We have to get Kawasaki's commitment, you know, mm-hmm. like later in 13 to make sure they're on board with it, obviously. But we talked about all those things up front, and mm-hmm. I certainly don't expect them to change their mind, and I hope they wouldn't.
Yeah.
That's the plan.
Okay. So, yeah. So, we're beginning a new era in a little bit, let's say, of Mitch Payton, Pro Circuit Racing, going 450 racing, which is, you know, long rumored.
I think it'll be good. I think, like I said, we'll learn something from it. You know, the goal of it, you know, like it, the, you know, if you said the goal is to go out and, you know, steal one of the top guys, You know, I don't know that that's necessarily our goal right now. I think our goal is to make a spot for our guys that come through our program and nurture that, give them a shot in the 450, and let's see how that goes. You know, and it's not necessarily to take somebody else's guy and plug him on the program. Yeah. You know, it's like it's to make a home for our guys so that we can do good things with it.
Well, yeah, and like us, like guys like me, goofballs like me in the media are looking at the Geico program and their stable of talent. And like I said, you lost the Bogle, you know, you lost the Baggett for a year, and you know, we're in this game, so we're like, is the Pro Circuit team losing their quote unquote edge or whatever?
Are we? I mean, it's like,
well, no, you're not. But you know what I mean? Like, you know, Geico has done a great job, as you know, you would admit, and they seem to have a pipeline of these dudes coming up that are, you know, so. But this is
Pipeline. Like we have kids coming up too. Right. You know, like there's, you know, we have Adam under contract now.
Yeah, maybe the fastest guy out there.
You know, like I believe in his talent. So like that was a risk that Kawasaki and everybody took early on that, and that happens every once in a while, and that was to prevent that from, you know,
from going on
going somewhere else. And so like I think we've got our eyes on what we're supposed to do. And you know, once again, like I don't think it's up to me to go have a factory amateur program to just, you know, bring the talent. Like that's where, you know, we're Kawasaki's lights program first and foremost. So we have to entrust them to do their job, you know, and they need to bring some good talent to the program, or we've got to go outside of Kawasaki's program and hire them from wherever they come from. You know, and that's where in the past we kind of did that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have done that throughout the years to grab the talent where we see it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're trying to be, quote, the good partner, and we're trying to, like, work within their program, and we're going to try to do it the way they would like to have us bring a kid up, you know, hopefully each year if we can.
Yeah.
But, you know, I won't take a guy if I you know, like, I'm not going to just take guys year after year if they're not making it.
Yeah, either. Yeah.
You know, we just can't do that either.
Talking about your team structure a little bit, the there's teams out there. The Star Racing, Bobby Regan, not a fan of me, but they've gone through a lot of managers. They've gone through a lot of riders. The other teams also seem to go through things. Geico has been pretty consistent with Ziggy, Myshack, LaRocco, and obviously JC was there for a number of years. You yourself, you don't have a team manager anymore, but you had Jim Perry and Osterman and Bones. Allie. Who forget about Allie? Bones has been there forever. How important is it if you run a team in this sport? And this is what I write about and what I talk about. I feel like the structure of a team is massively important, and keeping the same people year after year is important. And I feel like some teams don't get that. Do you agree?
I agree with that a lot.
Yeah.
Like I guess maybe, I don't know, for whatever reason, you know, it's because maybe I'm the owner or whatever, you know, they're saying, oh, well, it's his team, and it's really not my team. It's our team, you know, like it's my team, and it's Bones' team, and it's Zach and Aaron, and it's all the mechanics. Yeah. And like, I look at it as like, we're a group, you know, and it's like our program.
Right. Well, and I forgot about Zach and Aaron. They've been here too, also for what, 10 years? I mean,
well, no, not 10 years.
Okay. But a long
a while,
time.
And like, I want to keep it that way. And like, I think it's important, you know, like that's, and even the 450 quote program, you know, like that's been something that Aaron has really wanted to do and been waiting to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, cause he was really instrumental in a lot of the development of the 450 that even the factory guys have, as we did a lot of development work, you know, for them. And, you know, that's, we kind of split the guys, and that's their babies. And I want to see them get the opportunity to show their capabilities and our company, you know, like our, you know, we got Randy and Darren and all the guys at the pipe shop and Nick and Malachi and our service guys and suspension guys, Ralph and those guys, and they love it. And Jerry, you know, the machinist, like, he's awesome. And Jeff and Alex in there, they're like, if everybody didn't help, you know, we couldn't do what we did for sure, or what we do.
What you
sure.
do, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's not a one-man show, and it's a very complicated thing to be successful. And anybody that is successful, in our sport knows that and knows the value of key people. And that's like, look at when Roger left, you know.
He
took some key people with him because he realized how important that was.
Is that the number one mistake you see? Or not number one, but is that a mistake you see with teams in our sport?
No, I think... I mean it, and you know, like, that's something, it's so funny. It's like, I think what happens too is after time, the development cycle of the bikes kind of taps out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And even the other teams can catch up a little bit. You know, like,
yeah,
if you look at like the first year we had a team in 91, you know, the peak bikes.
Mm-hmm.
We were heads and shoulders above everybody.
Yeah.
Equipment-wise, as far as motors and stuff. And then, you know, just slowly, everybody can slowly catch up. And there's only so far you can take anything.
Yeah.
And if you look at 04 with the 250F, there was 250Fs already out there, but that was our first year, and we were really successful of making a lot of power, and, mm-hmm, and we helped Factory Connection for, you know, what, 4 or 5 years?
Yeah.
And those are the two best bikes, you know? But now, you know, it's as sad as it is, you educate those people and, you know, it's almost monkey see, monkey do a little bit,
yeah,
you know? And once everybody kind of gets a clue of the direction or the feel for it, you know, like, mm-hmm, everybody catches up a little bit. So in order to keep that edge or that valuable difference,
mm-hmm,
it becomes more technical, more difficult, more expensive,
mm-hmm,
to shine away a little bit more, you know, like, you really got to get everything out of everything,
yeah,
in order to separate yourself, because, you know, there's nowadays with our industry, there's everybody and their brothers doing suspension in the garage, and guys are doing motors everywhere, and, you know, like, we've sold motors, you know, for 5 years now, or 6 years, mm-hmm, or 7 years for four strokes, and guys pull them apart, look at them, oh, I know what he did, you know, like,
now I know what he did. Yeah.
So you sort of, you lose some of that. You're educating the masses a little.
Yeah.
And you know, we do the same thing, you know, like, we've looked at other stuff also to just evaluate where we're at.
Yeah.
So like, everything gets harder to be a step above, mm-hmm, everybody.
But you do that with people, maybe. That's one of the things you can invest in. It's one of the things you can do it with, is people, having good people.
It is.
Keeping people in place.
It totally is, right. and it's very important. And the other thing is, we've been very successful, and I believe in, you know, like, we've got really long relationships with all of our, you know, our vendors and our sponsors and stuff like that. So, like, we can lean, or I can, I lean kind of heavy on some of our vendors to help me, you know, make the next step that I want to try, you know, mm-hmm, I want to do this, you know, and they're like, oh my God, you know, like, wait a minute, I've never left you, I've been here through the thing, don't give me that, you know,
right.
And they're like, yeah, we know, okay.
But you're a competitive guy.
So we can do those things at a decent amount of time, and it helps.
Last question for you. Have you seen those Inside the Outdoors?
I haven't seen any this year.
You haven't? Okay, no. Damn, because it was a big topic on the last Pulp show we did. They're sort of focusing on the negatives, guys who don't have rides, guys who the sport hasn't rewarded, you know, not the superstars, not the millionaires.
Like who?
Tommy Hahn, no ride. Kyle Chisholm, no ride, up in, you know, when they were filming it. Nico Izzy, heartbreak, injury. Roger doesn't call him in the hospital, loses all his money, you know, and then now he's on the road back. It's focusing on the darker side, and we wondered if that's good for the sport or good. But if you haven't seen it, it's tough for you to comment.
Well,
but
I would say that there's, you know, reality is reality. And you know, like...
Sorry to interrupt you. The last show was about Jake. Mm-hmm. Jake and his dad. His dad, the cost of going racing. Jake's dad mortgaged the farm. You know, sold the family farm. Now they bought another one since then. But to keep Jake racing, he had to, you know, sell the farm. So...
But
sort of that.
Yeah. I say that there's, I think it's positive and negatives, you know, like, or there's dark sides for sure. And there's obviously, you know, there's the feel good stories in any sport. Ours has them too. You know, like, you know, you look at, I don't know, pick a guy like Carmichael, you know, like, I always think mom and dad are just awesome, great people. And, mm-hmm, you know, like, look at what successes they lived through and made and all that kind of stuff. and that just keeps happening. And, you know, the McGrath family, I mm-hmm. consider that a great success story. And, you know, those type of things are feel-good stories. And, of course, you know, anything is shaped kind of like a pyramid. So you've got one guy at the top.
Mm-hmm.
He makes a ton of money. Then there's two guys below it, and they make pretty good money. Then there's four guys below that, and they make decent money.
Right.
And then when you get down to that, where the eight guys are, they're not making so much.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's in a lot of ways, it's better, I think, than it used to be. You know, like
yeah.
a long time. Like, well, when you were with Rollerball or Jeff Hicks, you know, right. they were.
Well, I wasn't with Rollerball. I would have loved to have been with Rollerball. But I was just watching.
Oh, maybe that was Marshall Plum.
That was Marshall Plum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so anyway, what I'm saying is
right.
like those guys were driving in Fox fans, Jeff Hicks.
Yeah.
And
making no money.
Fred Andrews. Well, they're making
yeah.
some, but they're trying to live the dream.
Right.
And
they're top 10 guys.
Right. And they were trying. And nowadays there's guys, fortunately, somehow that we do it and that we have some programs out there that are additional. Like our 450 program will employ two riders.
Yeah.
You know, and Larry Brooks's team employs one rider. And Gibbs is two riders.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the guy down in Florida?
Butler.
Butler Brothers.
Yeah.
They have a couple.
Yeah.
You know, you start adding it up, and there's another 12, 15 mm-hmm. opportunities that it would be rough for a guy to take a four-stroke
yeah.
and throw it in a minivan and head to the races
mm-hmm.
nowadays. So... In the lights program, you know, like because of the split coast, which I still believe in.
Yeah, are you still a fan of that? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I still believe in the split coast because if you believe in the, you know, they always say the spirit of the rule. The spirit mm-hmm. of the rule means that if a kid has decent talent, he'll get support.
Mm-hmm.
And he might be able to afford to do 8 or 9 races,
mm-hmm.
but unless he's pretty wealthy, he can't
yeah.
do the full 18 rounds.
Yeah.
So it kind of enables a kid coming out of amateur to try it, which it'll be difficult, of course.
Yeah.
But it enables them to do it, and because of that, you wind up with programs that have 4 riders, 2 on each coast, you know,
mm-hmm.
or like we're going to have 3 on each coast. So
right.
I still believe in the split coasts. And the dark side is in every sport. You can read basketball, baseball.
Yeah.
There's those exact stories, you know, of mm-hmm. the parents.
Almost would haves or could have beens or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it's a sad, mm-hmm. it is sad.
Yeah.
It's very sad. You know, but then again, it's like in the big scheme of life, you know, like you didn't get a ride, but you raced for how many years in the sport? You traveled probably
right.
the United States and the world. Really?
Right.
It ain't that bad.
Well, yeah, and that's one of the things that we talked about is that, and again, I don't want to pick on Tommy Hahn. You know, they show his house and his big motorhome, and, I mean, Tommy has probably made $1 million in his career.
Made more than that, probably.
Okay, made more than $1 million. I haven't made more than $1 million in my career. Do you know what I mean? And yes, his time is tough for him, but he still had a lifestyle that was pretty damn good for a number of years.
Yeah, and
I didn't want to make it sound like
what's really difficult too is they do it at such a young age that the amount of money that they make isn't a reality like it might be to you.
Yeah.
You know, like now at your age you'd say, "Wow, I'm going to make 180 grand this year."
Yeah.
You're like, "I'm killing it."
Yeah, right.
But 180 grand to a 16-year-old means a new truck.
yeah, exactly.
You know,
right.
some cool stuff, and that's a little bit of bad judgment, but everybody probably goes through it,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
sadly enough, it happens a lot.
All right. All right, man. I've taken enough time away from the grinding of the head. Thank you for doing the podcast. I appreciate it, and good luck with everything this year. You guys are looking pretty damn good.
We hope so, and I'll be here before we know it.